use your strengths as a small, nimble, agile company, and you know, the fact that you are bleeding edge technology, but also think big and think like an enterprise. So market yourself as an enterprise, act like an enterprise, and present yourself like an enterprise, because you're going to be there day two.
Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. My name's Abby White. I'm the CEO of Sales Redefined and your host for the Redefining Sales Podcast. This week, we have got James Campbell, Regional Manager for Australia and New Zealand at SnapLogic, with us on the podcast. Now, I am so excited for you to listen to this episode. The reason being, James is so open, so honest, so raw in this conversation. And I honestly think we need more conversations like this in life. So I think there is something that everyone can take away from this conversation. Now, in this conversation, we talk about how did James get into sales. We talk about some of his leadership top tips, some of the best advice he's ever received. And of course, some of our favorite topics around what is working right now in lead generation, prospecting, and high performance sales. Now, before we get stuck into the episode, I just want to read you a tiny bit of a snippet from James's bio to give you a little bit more information about him and SnapLogic. So as I mentioned, James is regional manager for Australia and New Zealand at SnapLogic and has nearly 2 decades experience. He's a very seasoned B2B tech leader with a strong track record of managing high performance teams whilst consistently delivering against business objectives. And now his focus is helping customers derive immense value from SnapLogic technology. And honestly, his seasoned experience that I refer to there absolutely shines through in this conversation. If you haven't come across SnapLogic before, SnapLogic powers the automated enterprise. The company's self-service AI-powered integration platform helps organizations connect applications and data sources, automate common workflows and business processes, and delivers exceptional experiences for customers, partners, and employees. And thousands of enterprises around the world are relying on the SnapLogic platform to integrate, automate, and transform their business. So that is just a little bit of context in case you haven't come across James and SnapLogic. So grab your coffee, your pad, your pen, and get ready to get stuck into this really honest, really fantastic conversation that I thoroughly enjoyed. James, welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. So good to have you with us today.
Thank you very much, Abby. I'm slightly nervous, but happy to be here.
Well, we've just found out that we've only just managed to get James on because he's actually got baby number 3 due in a couple of weeks, or a week, I think you said. So actually, we've just managed to sneak you on before a paternity leave. So I'm extra grateful to have you here now.
Yeah, thanks, Abby. And as I said, I'm monitoring my phone, not just for customer SMSs, but also from my wife. So,
all right. Well, if you have to go, we'll all forgive you for that. So that's fine.
I'm sure we'll be okay.
Well, let's dive straight in before we get a call from your wife. So I want to start out by asking a little bit about your background. I'm really curious about this because I don't think many of us started out, you know, in teenage years or at uni or whatever your background is, where we go, oh yeah, I really want to be in sales. Like, it's not really a career that many of us think of. I think most of us accidentally fall into it. So I'd love to get a bit of your backstory of how you ended up landing in the world of sales.
Yeah, that's an interesting question and an interesting way of framing it, because it makes me think, you know, one of the best sales guys I knew actually studied optometry. He was an optometrist before he started in IT sales. But you're right. I mean, a lot of people that, you know, are in IT sales, you know, didn't grow up wanting to be in IT sales. They naturally find it, or, you know, just through maturing in various careers, they get, you know, naturally pushed towards it. You know, to answer your question, how did I get into sales? It was more, how did I get into IT? Because I had a variety of jobs as a young person. And I was studying and I was in the middle of a sporting career, and I needed to find a job, and I landed into IT, and I actually started my life in IT in tech support. And it was a really important part of my success in my career and where I'm at now, because The things I learned in those early days were really highly valuable. So I was, you know, responsible for solving challenges for small, medium businesses and users around IT. And I, you know, through that time, I learned how important IT is in people's lives and in people's businesses, right? And how it impacts their workforce productivity, how it impacts their finance, their sales divisions. And I earned a lot of, I gained a lot of bruises and I earned a lot of scars and valuable experiences, you know, being at the other end of the stick, you know, running support. That's how I started. And then, look, I worked for a big IT company and I had the opportunity to kind of hop skip into various business units. I spent time in operations. I spent time in product management. And then, you know, over those 5 or 6 years of just learning various parts of how a big IT organization works and how the customers work, I naturally sort of became very friendly with one of the really senior salespeople in this organization. And they naturally took me under their wing and we had an informal mentoring relationship. And it was just through that period that I discovered that you could earn a lot of money in sales. I knew I had a good grounding because I understood the pains that people felt, you know, when dealing with IT. I understood how an IT organization operates. I understood how products worked, how they were released, developed. And I had all of that grounding and I had a very good mentor. And the mentor identified that I had a very good grounding set of experiences that put me in a great position to serve customers. And thankfully, this mentor is still a personal mentor to this day, you know, showed me how important it was not just to think about sales, but to consider, you know, the everything else. So, that's how I got into sales.
That's awesome. Because a lot of the time I found, like I started on the IBM grad scheme. So probably sort of similar to you, you know, you start going through those big companies and you typically get put in a box of, you know, are you in the sales side of the fence or are you on the technical side of the fence? And you kind of get put into one of the two. And it's actually can be challenging to actually cross over. So I actually really like how you've kind of got that rounding of doing the support side and the technical side and the product side and sort of built that towards sales. That's pretty cool that you've been able to do that. And I know that can be quite hard to do actually because you do get put in a box.
Mm. Yeah, and I think people feel it on the other side, right? And when you're, you know, as a salesperson, you are put in a box. But when you can, you know, talk in depth about, you know, even the support elements and show an understanding of and an empathy towards the other aspects of dealing with an IT company, not just the sales aspect, I think it goes a long way.
Yeah, that's awesome. And tell us about, so now today you're with SnapLogic. So tell us a bit about SnapLogic and your role today.
SnapLogic is probably the most exciting company I've ever worked for. I've had a mixed experience. I've worked for very big companies, IT companies, very small. I've worked for established and, you know, hyper growth, hyperscale businesses. And SnapLogic is kind of somewhere in between. You know, I've typically worked in traditional companies, traditional IT companies, and I have worked for very bleeding edge as well. But SnapLogic sits in an older market in the integration space, but it's a very 2.0 company and it's experiencing hypergrowth. So in IT, you have the market and then sub-markets. And these sub-markets will, they'll spin up based on, you know, the transition in IT that occurs constantly. And they can evaporate as they become less relevant. But SnapLogic sits in the integration space, which is a very large part of the IT market, but it's really pushing the boundaries and it's kind of very visionary and redefining the way people do integration.
Awesome. And so on that note, I've got to sort of ask you, because you sort of referenced there, you know, you've worked for the smaller businesses, the larger businesses, bleeding edge, traditional, you kind of had quite a wealth of experience in the industry. I kind of consider IT as one of the most competitive industries, and maybe I'm just biased in saying that. But I'm curious to get your take, having seen IT from so many different lenses, what you think it takes to play a high performance game in IT sales. Big question for you.
Break it down. It's a huge question, right? Like, when we break down high performance, you know, does it, as it relates to the individual, as it relates to the company? Look, from my perspective, it's, you know, senior sales leadership. You know, at working in a high scale up business, which is bleeding edge, they're not going to be there forever, right? They're going to grow to a point where they become a large, larger company. So you never get caught in the moment. You don't act like a startup all the time. You take the best of both worlds and you think big and you think about where we're going to be day two and day three. So just to relate back to your question, you know, when approaching it within a startup, some of the most successful, things I've seen, you know, people do in sales management is use your strengths as a small, nimble, agile company, and you know, the fact that you are bleeding edge technology, but also think big and think like an enterprise. So market yourself as an enterprise, act like an enterprise, and present yourself like an enterprise, because you're going to be there day two. But on the flip side, if you're a big established player and you don't have necessarily some of that more bleeding edge technology, leverage your strengths again. you have a big enterprise, what are the opportunities to collaborate with other bleeding edge technologies so they can leverage, you know, what you have as an enterprise and incorporate them into your technology messaging and into your customer engagements.
And what about on a personal level? Because, you know, I was checking out and stalking your LinkedIn when I came across you, and, you know, you've had a hugely successful career. And I think to go through the different departments that you've done, like you said, from product management to technical support to sales, to now being in sort of a senior leadership role, you've had enormous sort of personal growth. So what do you think that sort of... if you had to sort of boil down some of the essence of it, of what you think makes someone successful with high performance, what do you think that is?
Again, a huge question. You know, you mentioned looking at it from a personal level, and I'll share with you, I guess, some of the feedback that I've had over the years on me personally. And I guess people sense a natural... get a natural sense of motivation from me. And if I peel that back and think why, I guess I place myself in positions that, you know, naturally kind of excite me and naturally motivate me. So I guess, you know, early on learning how to do a bit of self-reflection and really think about, am I happy? Am I in the right place? Is this the kind of challenge that I want right now? Where am I going to be in a couple of years' time, 3, 4, 5 years' time? What am I doing now that's going to relate to where I want to maybe be in a few years? So always being a little bit conscious of your growth and making sure that you're in the right environment, the right company, surrounded by the right type of people for what you need at the time. I guess I placed myself well, in short. And then, you know, there's everything else. I could talk for days about, why I've done well. But I guess at the end of the day, people trust me. I guess I naturally like to help people, the people around me. And I think that comes back to you when people sense that, you know, you're genuinely trying to help them or solve their problems or help them with their career or their life, then they tend to work well with you and it comes back.
Yeah. And then by the sounds of it, mentoring as well has been sort of a big part of your journey, that you've invested proactively by the sounds of it in mentoring as well.
Yeah, I'll admit I was very, very lucky. I got tapped early on the shoulder by, you know, really good people that probably had a bit too much spare time. I experienced some really high value mentoring, and I learned a lot. I was open to it. I think, you know, whatever scientific explanation there is for it, but we all know that when we kind of open ourselves up to the universe, that, you know, the universe lets itself in. So if you're just naturally looking for development, looking to get better, there's always going to be someone that has something to share with you or give. And yeah, look, I must have been putting those signals out. I was lucky at the time. I just thought this is a great way of getting ahead. Over the years, I've actually seen mentoring more as a strategic business tool within an organization to actually increase, productivity, retention, experience, all that sort of stuff for the organization too. So I now promote it across the organization.
I agree. I really do. I think mentors have been so pivotal for me in my corporate career and then outside now, you know, having my own business. I'm curious on the mentor front, have you always looked to try and have mentors who are within the organization that you're working for, or you've tried to have external mentors that bring a completely different lens and outside of that organization? What's your sort of, or a mix of both, what's your take on that?
It's as I said, I didn't select it, you know, early days. It kind of fell on me, and it was within the organization. And in those days, the mentoring was more related to, how to kind of increase the velocity of your success in your role. But over time, it kind of developed into more personal things, right? As you get older and mature, and you face different challenges over time because they're always changing and presenting, you know, life's always presenting new challenges with time, different mentors appeared at those times. And they weren't from within the organization. They were from other networks. There was a period there where I did think really hard, and I went on a search to find and try and find mentors outside. And I tried to broaden and really critically think about, you know, but it didn't work. It didn't actually work. I found the more I approached and forced myself onto others for that kind of relationship, it didn't flow as naturally.
I love that you've invested in that. And I like that you said the point of you were open to it in the first instance when it appeared, because it's actually something really interesting that I look for. You know, when I have people who I have mentors myself, and when I get asked to mentor other people, that's the first thing I'm looking for, is actually, is that person coachable? Are they actually open to it? Or have they just been asked by their boss to do it and they're sort of turning up and so on? And I think that's actually big. You were open to it. And so, you know, I think it sounds really small, but I think there's a lot of people who actually aren't open to it and are not coachable. So I think the fact you were open to it is probably, you know, don't want to speak for you, but probably also something that stood you in good stead.
Mm. Yeah, look, mentor. And the other thing is, mentoring can be 5 minutes, or it can be 5 years, or you know, 20 years.
So I'm going to take a changing tact on you. We've seen a lot of changes in sales over the past couple of years. Obviously, we've had the delightful C-bomb of COVID that we don't like to talk about. And it's kind of interesting at the moment to see some of the changes that are appearing in sales. I think some stuff stood the test of time, and there's other things that are sort of relatively new and changing and evolving. So I'm kind of interested to get your perspective on that, you know, around, what are you seeing working right now from a sales perspective? Have you seen much change, or for you, is it same as it's always been? You know, what are you seeing from your lens?
Mm. Look, great question. Definitely, I think, you know, the last, you know, year has caused a lot of movement. A lot of people are feeling, the behaviors we're seeing, a lot of people are a bit frantic. They're feeling a lot of risk, uncertainty. You know, we've all heard these words, but that is translating into behaviors across the board from a number of businesses, right? And it's not misunderstood. You know, it's easy to understand given the circumstances. So when looking at it from, you know, from a distance, I guess one you know, way of truing up that behavior is to just get a bit of focus. You know, it's quite easy to become unfocused and jump at flashing lights or shadows in this time because you are feeling, you know, so uncertain and so much risk. I guess just stay your course. You know, focus on the important things. Don't panic and you know, take the time to kind of step back and plan. You know, plan mid and long term. And take your time and breathe and relax and make those plans and then execute rather than just getting into a cycle of chasing your tail. So that is a very philosophical kind of view of it. I mean, I could go into some of the, you know, the tactics that we're using, but that would be.
I'd love to hear how you've adapted as an organization. Like, are your team still really working virtually? Are you back face-to-face? Are you hybrid? Like, how have you had to transition your sales organization?
Yeah, look, there's definitely a theme of experience-based marketing. I think, you know, keeping your current relationships really near and dear to your heart and trying to just keep your loyal customers loyal, staying close with them, assisting them on their journey and helping them with their challenges, helping them get through this hard time, I think is a strategy for success as we all come through it and become stronger and ready for the next challenge. You'll have a strong, successful customer for life with a really great relationship. So we've been focused on, you know, just maintaining the experience and sticking really close with our current customers, as well as obviously addressing the new set of challenges that has, you know, been presented over the last 12 months. So we've changed some of our messaging, our thinking, the way we present ourselves, you know, to suit some of the more modern type challenges that we're seeing. They would be the two big focuses for us. I mean, the other thing, sorry, Abby, we've kind of diversified our thinking in the way we invest in marketing as well. We're not doing as many traditional events. We're doing more philanthropic events, and we're trying to place our chips behind charitable causes and just more human centric type events.
That's interesting. Are you doing that? That's so interesting. Are you doing that in collaboration with customers as sort of something that customers can also get involved in, or that's more from a perspective of SnapLogic and your team?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. You know, we've done small things like, you know, planting trees where we invest on behalf of the customer. Based on their relationship with us, we get them involved on that journey, and we do it together. We're part of another charitable organization that basically brokers meetings with other executives in the IT landscape, and we pay money to have those meetings brokered, and a percentage of those proceeds go to charitable causes, and we pass on, you know, the thank you to those IT executives, and we're really you know, proud of that, achieving those donations as well. So that's a couple of examples.
I love that. I was looking at some research recently around, you know, corporate social responsibility, and I feel like a few years ago it used to be, and this probably isn't politically correct to say, but I'm going there anyway. I feel like several years ago it used to almost be a tick bucket exercise, and you'd get a tender or an RFP, you'd have to respond to, you know, do you comply with ABC? Do you do all of this? Whereas now what I love about what's happened is there's such genuine intent behind it. And, you know, it's now showing actually how much customers are actually considering their choices. You know, you only have to look at what happened with Russia and Ukraine, and you know, all of the businesses that pulled out of Russia, and, you know, nobody's prepared to back a business that is actually not got good morals, good ethics, and they're actually standing up. No different to sort of, you know, with the US with Roe and Wade. And that's obviously a big level, but there's also, like you said, the small levels as well. And I think it's interesting to see how much now it is genuinely influencing people's decision-making and purchasing. Have you seen that? Like, how have your customer
I agree, and what I've just mentioned is a very small start, and it's a bit of a slight pivot. And you're right, it was a tick box, but and we're only doing a small part of it at the moment. But it's definitely a focus, and it's something we're really enjoying, and we're seeing working really well. So it's something we're going to continue to focus on and develop.
Yep. And I think it's interesting for employees as well. I've noticed we did on International Women's Day, we supported female entrepreneurs in developing countries, and we gave each of our team a budget that they could go on to Kiva is the website and could donate to various different women. And they got to choose which women they supported, which projects they supported, and they got to see that. And I think from an employee perspective as well, you know, it's not massive, but it actually makes a difference and it's quite motivating.
Yeah, it does. Look, at the end of the day, you know, I think the last 12, 24 months has kind of taught us a lot of lessons that we are human, and there's no reason why we can't continue to be humans and incorporate that into the way we do business. It's definitely shone a bit of a spotlight on the topic, and, you know, it feels good, right? And it's just part of, you know, feeling good about doing business, and the world needs it. The world needs more of it. It's contagious. And, you know, I guess selfishly, it is a differentiator as well, you know, because people, you know, this is a sales redefine, you know, podcast. There's probably a lot of sales experts and practitioners out there trying to work out how to cut through the noise, the competition, the crowded space that we all work in. And the truth is, a lot of people have 1,000 emails and 100 calls to field a day. And sometimes people just want to feel human and feel good about doing business with someone. And I think the more of this we can do, the better, you know, salespeople will be for it, and the better the world will be for it.
Yeah, I really wholeheartedly agree with that. And it's really fantastic to hear your examples. You mentioned their marketing. You've taken a bit of a changed approach to marketing, topic close to my heart. How are you bringing together your sales and marketing? You know, it's a topic that we're really passionate about at Sales Redefined, of how we sort of bridge the gap between the two and not have, you know, what you would have seen, I'm sure, in some of the larger organizations you worked with. There can be at times that sort of disconnect. We joke about it as being like a divorced couple. So how are you pulling together, you know, you mentioned a new approach to marketing. So I'm curious around what you're doing there and how you're bringing that together with sales.
Yeah, look, it's part of my response is because we are a relatively, like, we don't have 1,000 salespeople and 100 marketing experts. We're a much smaller organization, so we act a little bit differently. We have opportunities to work together a little bit differently, but some of the core things that we do are still, you know, what you would expect in a big company. I mean, it starts with being quite data-driven. So all of the salespeople in the organization, you know, have an interest in understanding their markets and understanding what their goals are in terms of penetrating those markets and where we fit. So we try and establish a lot of data. We try and pull plans together as a sales organization on what's important and what our, you know, theories are on where we should be playing. So that's kind of step one. Then step two is we have very, very regular planning meetings with marketing, looking at the events, you know, calendars, looking at what's available in market, looking at what other people are doing, and just constant iteratively looking at how the sales plan and our goals are relating to, you know, field events, marketing and things like that. So I guess what I'm saying is have a strong relationship with the marketing team, be in constant contact, the relationship needs to be, you know, constantly having feedback, constantly flowing back and forth, but have the data. The sales organization needs to have the data to back up some of their claims, and needs to be respectful discussion going on between the two experts, the sales expert and the marketing expert, and an agreement on where investment goes and how we execute, and then constant reviews on how it went. And it's pretty much as simple as that.
You say it's simple, but it's not common practice. I think the latest research is showing 1/3 of sales and marketing companies sales and marketing departments don't regularly communicate, and 9 out of 10 sales and marketing professionals don't believe they're in alignment around KPIs, goals, culture. So it is simple, but even just that, getting people together regularly, communicating, agreeing together, you would not believe how rare that actually is.
It's just a bit of, you know, it's one thing I learned early. It's, you know, my manager in my first 3 months at SnapLogic was absolutely shocked when I called him and I asked him to performance manage me. He kind of was like, you know, he kind of lay back in his chair and went, what? I said, I want to be performance managed. I want you to inspect my plans. I want you to inspect my activity. I need other people in this business to know what I'm doing and understand my ideas and what I'm doing. And I need to be validated what I'm doing. And I need other people's ideas, right? Because there's no one individual that knows everything. So you always are going to have helpful advice. Two, if no one else is aware of your plans or buying into your plans or knows their role in your plans, then they're not going to participate in your plans and your plans aren't going to be successful. I guess I'm kind of calling out that example because it's a bit of a mantra that I'm trying to build internally, where everyone is constantly asking one another to inspect what they're doing and asking the question, what do you think about this? Do you think this is going to work? Why not? Thank you. And and that's part, it's just part, you know, who would think that a salesperson would bring their sales plan to the marketing meeting and present it to the marketing person and ask for advice, right? But that's just how we're trying to kind of change that dynamic, and it's working.
I love that. So I've got to finish off that part of the story. So your manager's reaction was yes.
He was delighted, right? And it put a bit of extra work on me. And I presented, and there was a lot of shortcomings in my plan. Some of them I was aware of and expecting, and some of them I was not aware of. And it ended up being a very productive and helpful process. And now we do it quite regularly.
I love that. So is that something, by the sounds of what you're saying, you also are encouraging your team to do? So looking at, you know, how you're getting that performance out of your team, you're encouraging them to look at mentoring, you're encouraging them to collaborate, you're encouraging them to be open to feedback and peer review. Is that the sort of culture that you're sort of now breeding and putting in place to try and help the team to play on their A game, essentially?
Oh, look, that's a big claim, you know. Designing and implementing, you know, culture in an organization, like, holy heck. Look, I guess naturally that's where it's heading. You know, naturally that's what people are responding well to, because I guess I do it naturally. It's something that I brought to the organization. Other people see it, are now replicating it, and they're getting value out of it. So very naturally everyone is doing more of it. So yeah, I guess you could say it's becoming part of the culture.
And it's also role modeling it, that it's, you know, this is a good thing to do, and this is, you know, role modeling it. You're not just giving out advice and saying you should do, you're actually practicing what you preach and leading from the front. And I think that makes a massive difference and doesn't happen often enough.
It's a fine line. You know, when you're a senior like sales leader, because there are expectations around how you manage a team. So it can be quite unusual for, you know, the sales leader to come down to the field level and act like a field member and yep. present the way they would do things. But so far, you know, it's been it's worked pretty well. People appreciate it and have responded well.
Yep. So I'm curious around your personal non-negotiables, because it kind of sounds like you invest in yourself quite a lot. You know, you've taken on working with mentors that have sort of come into your world. You know, you sound like you've been very open to feedback and so on. And I'm really curious around what have been some of your non-negotiables that have helped you to sort of really turn up and be at your best and to actually build the career that you've built. You know, you've got nearly three kids now. There's a lot going on there. So what are some of your personal non-negotiables that help you be at your best and turn up to work at your best?
Yeah, look, I think it's a lot of people refer to sales as a bit of a sport. And I guess the way I look at it is, you know, when I think about my days in sport playing football, you know, I wouldn't have survived if I didn't have the right training regime, if I didn't have discipline around my training and my eating habits and you know, work-life balance. And it's kind of I feel it's, you know, what I've implemented in my sales career is quite similar. You know, I'm very structured in the way I divide my time. You know, I look at, you know, the key parts of the sales role are the you know, the science behind the planning, having you know, setting goals around the types and amounts of customer engagement that you do, you know, working well with a team. It's just establishing some rigor and some discipline and some structure around those things. If you kind of break down the role and you look at, you know, how many meetings do I need to do, how many calls do I need to do, how many meetings with marketing, how often do I present my plan to marketing and management, how often do I do, you know, QBRs with my customers, how often do I do internal QBRs? How often do I meet with my alliance partners? What do I talk to them about? If you kind of break down your life as a salesperson or a sales, you know, professional, you can break it into those boxes. And you need to do all of them. And I guess the key thing is just being disciplined. And whatever you need to do to keep that discipline and keep on those cadences, is over time makes you successful, I guess. It's the same with football. Like, if you only turn up to one of the training sessions a week rather than three, you know, your fitness won't be at the level that you need to be. You'll get injuries, you'll have time off the field, and you'll spiral backwards, right? But if you get your training right, but you're not eating well enough, you won't have enough energy and your training will fail, and you get injuries and you'll spiral backwards. So they're all kind of equally as important, and it's a little bit like spinning plates. You've just got to gently walk around and continue to spin all of the plates, and over time I guess that's how you become successful. That would be my answer.
No, I love that. And it's funny, I'm training for a half marathon at the moment, and as I was running, doing a long run the other day, I was thinking of a really good blog article, as you do as you're running, and I was like, actually, there is so much that I've learned about this training plan working with a new coach that I think relays to sales. And it's exactly what you talked about. It's like showing up, it's being consistent, it's, you know, turning up every day, you know, the hard work is before the race. And there were so many things I was thinking about in terms of the parallel, so I actually love that parallel that you've drawn. And absolutely, I agree.
It helps me a lot, you know. And your comment on the hardest part is the preparation before the race. It's the same thing. It's the stretching, it's the massage, it's the needling before the game to make sure that you're prepared. It's the same thing, you know. Do your research on the client, you know, talk to others, talk to your alliance partners, have a plan, you know, be prepared, turn up early, you know, have an objective for the meeting. It's all the same thing. It all relates to, when you break down the job and the 20 things that you need to do, it's just structuring them into your working week and just making sure that you kind of tick them off. Yep.
I love that. And one of my favorite sayings is common sense isn't common practice. So it might sound obvious, it might sound basic, but actually, if you look across the board, it's actually not common practice. So it's actually getting back to the fundamentals.
It's hard. And there are other forces, natural forces, forces outside of the work, you know, environment. Yep. So absolutely.
Yep. So I'm curious, you've done obviously a lot of mentoring that we've spoken about quite in depth. What has been the best bit of career advice you've ever been given? Big question.
this will give away a lot about me, but that's a good question. You know, this comes to mind straight away. Don't sweat the small stuff. That was probably the best thing for me. Look, I can be super overly analytical at times, right? I can spend way too much time analyzing something or sweating over something small. And a lot of people fall into the same issue. So that was a great piece of advice. When you feel yourself sweating over something that's potentially small, stop, step back, take a breath, think of the bigger picture, and the smaller elements will kind of become less of a worry when you're focused on the bigger picture, I guess. Yeah. So. Yeah,
I like that. And is there a business book? I ask everyone this, is there a business book that you have read, or it doesn't have to be business related, but is there a book that you've read that's kind of influenced your thinking, your career, that you'd recommend to others?
Look, I think a lot of people have probably read this book. I read it very early days, The Art of War.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a favorite for a lot of people, but I mean, for me, I think I'm naturally a very risk-averse person. I like to be quite calculated. I don't like going into environments when I'm not sure of, you know, everything around me, what my job is and what the objective is. So the one thing I liked about The Art of War is there's like 13 steps that it outlines, and it's all about, at the end of the day, winning before you've even started the battle.
Mm.
I love that notion, because for someone that's super risk averse, a little bit, you know, panicky, likes to be in a little bit of control and understand things and have a clear, you know, plan. the book really resonated with me, and I've carried it through my life. So when I approach things, I'm kind of starting from, is this a strong situation for us? Do we have a clear line of value? Does it make sense? Can we win this? And then kind of work back from that.
I have not read that book in years. So you've just inspired me to get that back out. I remember the first time I tried to read it, because it's not just an easy read. I kind of had to really really concentrate and keep on going back and rereading it, because it's not just a, like, you know, sometimes I'll read as you get into bed and you're half falling asleep. It's not one of those just sit back and read it in bed books.
Yeah, you'll have interesting dreams if you read it before bed, definitely. But it's not for everyone, and that's why I kind of preface it with, you know, those that are a little bit, you know, risk averse, highly calculated, you know, admittedly like to be, have a good level of control. It's a great book.
Mm. And if you could leave one parting thought with our audience, what would it be? We've covered so much ground between data-driven sales, between how philanthropy is coming into the mix. We've talked about mentoring. We've talked about personal discipline. We've talked about so many different things. If you could leave one parting thought, what would it be?
I wasn't prepared for this question, but based on today's conversation, I would say humility. Humility has got me a long way. You know, I remember being very young and having my very first meeting with a CIO. It was my very first senior executive meeting, and I was freaking out. And one of my mentors said, "James, they're just a human. Talk to them like a person. They've probably just finished changing nappies this morning. They may be in a good mood. They may be in a bad mood, but they're just human. So talk to them as such." And, you know, I think just keeping it a little bit real and human, having a balance between your level and skills and level of professionalism, but introducing humility and being, you know, just being a little bit human in your role would be my parting advice.
I love that. That's one of my favorite answers that I've actually ever heard. I really, no, genuinely like it. And I think we need more of it because we are all real. You know, before I came on this podcast, I was just talking to a friend of mine and she's like, you know, we were talking about the fact that actually it's hard when you look out there and it looks like everyone's got their shit together and it looks like everyone's organized and, you know, all the rest of it. And you're kind of looking at yourself sometimes going, hang on, why is my kid sick every 3 seconds and why this and why that and so on, and going off track now. But I think that human element, and I sort of said, I was having this conversation literally 2 minutes beforehand, and I said, I always want to try and give a really honest answer when I'm talking about this, because I think all of us have a personal life. All of us have challenges. All of us have sick kids. All of us have that sort of thing. And I think it's that being human piece. You know, it's okay now that yesterday in our team meeting, two of us turned up with sick kids on our lap and the kids are sitting there in the team meeting, whereas 5 years ago, that wouldn't have been accepted. So I actually love that answer more than you know, because I think we all need it, because there's been too much fake or pretenses. Maybe that's not the right way of putting it, but there's been too much of that for too long and no one can live up to that.
Hmm. I'm glad it resonated with you. Thanks.
Perfect. Well, James, thank you so much. If anyone wants to connect with you, I assume we'll put a link in the show notes to your LinkedIn profile and obviously to the SnapLogic website, and connect with you to chat from there.
Yeah, please do. If you want to talk about anything at all, reach out. I'd be happy to, and I'm grateful for everyone's time, and hopefully there was a nugget and I had a positive impact on one of the viewers or listeners. So thanks for the opportunity, Abby. It's great.
I have no shadow of a doubt that you did. Thanks, James. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for tuning in. Now, before you leave us, if you would like to download our latest white paper on the state of sales and marketing, which unpacks 4 steps to drive hyper growth in your business, please visit whitepaper.salesredefined.com.au. And if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure that you subscribe so that you never miss a future episode. And finally, we would absolutely love it and appreciate it if you could leave us a review and maybe even share with a friend. We'll see you next time.